Fife fans, and welcome back to Scotland's premier Fife-based podcast, Fife Club. As always, the first rule of Fife Club is... Please talk about Fife Club. Fuck it, they did it last week.
We do it sometimes, don't do it others. It's really to fuck with you, basically.
Ah, yeah, just leave me fucking hanging.
Yeah.
Thanks. So, yeah, you'll all be glad to know that we once again managed to escape the desert island last week. We really should stop sailing into things and getting shipwrecked. You'd think we'd learn by now.
It's just funny once every 2 weeks.
Yeah. It's rocks! Oh, fuck. Once again. Yeah.
Just can't let Jamie sail, can you? That's the problem. Jamie's the captain of our ship every time.
And then we see...
Well, you keep singing the fucking song.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Yeah.
And then we see that fucking honey badger on the beach just waiting for us. Ah, dear.
Do you think the honey badger is more popular than any of us?
Probably, yeah.
I think in fairness, yeah.
Anyway, around the glorious mic with my good self Kutch tonight is the despot oppressor of beasts, the target of their ire, hailing from Yorkshire, it's Jamie.
Hello.
That was a beautiful intro.
Yeah.
I like it.
And next to him is the gin-soaked lush with his slimline tonics and limes peeled, all the way from Brucefield, it's Mark.
I'm going to... hit you on a couple of technicalities. One, I don't live on Brucefield. And two, I would never drink slimline tonic. So back to the drawing board with that one, Kutch. Nice try, though.
You know. I thought it was a nice slur for you.
Yeah, well, actually. Yeah, fuck you. Fuck you, mate. Outside.
And across from him is the noise from West Fife. The voice that is rife. She might do your head in. Screaming in from her hometown of Kincardine.
I know that, like, well, no, I am going to bother to correct you. The good listeners need to know I'm from Westfield, which is a mile outside Kincardine. I have been telling you this for nearly 20 years now, and you keep saying I'm from Kincardine.
Put a drink in her, and she's like, it was Kincardine.
Well, are you not technically from Clackmannanshire?
Well, so the interesting thing about, fun fact about Kincardine, it's in Fife. It is in Fife. Postally, it's Falkirk. Mm-hmm. For the health board, it shares a doctor surgery with Clackmannan.
All right.
Although it's a Forth Valley Health Board, and the phone number were Alloa. So there you go. So Kincardine is from everywhere and nowhere all at once.
Can I have a little correction on that one as well? You prefixed that with interestingly.
There can't be many other places in Scotland that have different phone numbers, different local authorities, different health services, and different postcodes.
Yeah.
So, you know, listeners, if you know anywhere out there that has a similarly mixed up identity.
Is it not because Kincardine was Clackmannan?
No, it's always been Fife, but I don't think Fife really wants it. It's been trying to get rid of it for ages. So when we were growing up, there was talk for a while about sending us to school in Larbert, because they just built a new school in Larbert.
It was probably closer.
But it was closer. It was, yeah. Well, there was loads of schools. All the schools in Alloa were closer.
Mm-hmm. It's mental that you don't go to Queen Anne.
Yeah.
But, all the schools in West, all the villages in West Fife got to Queen Anne apart from
Kincardine, which
goes to
Dunfermline
and Hatton.
Yeah.
Again, no one wanted us. We're just too cool. We're too cool for school.
You've got to contain the KYT.
Totally. You can't send us and kids from Valleyfield to the same school. Although kids from Valleyfield go to Woodmill? Inverkeithing?
No, that's right.
I don't know, actually.
Kids from Valleyfield randomly go to Inverkeithing, and we always used to say it was because nobody wanted them. They'd been kicked out of all the other schools. And then we'd get on our bus to Dunfermline High, the only village that went there as well. So there you go, a bit of Fife chat for you.
Yeah.
Well, just on a little bit of Fife chat as well, I was just thinking, watching the news the other day as well. Like, so over the last week, we've had, like, potential nuclear war with North Korea. We've got massive race riots erupting in the US. And I was like, basically, we're going to end up in some kind of post-apocalyptic wasteland. So if that actually happens, then fucking hell, Kirkcaldy's ahead of the curve. For you, Ralph.
I thought you were going to say, though, the one genuinely interesting thing about Fife, it's equipped with its own secret nuclear bunker, which isn't a secret because it's a tourist attraction. Yeah. But when the apocalypse comes, Fifers are getting first dibs on that. Like, we're not
do you think
any...
we're going to beat the poshos from St Andrews in there?
Oh, well, they wouldn't have been because they don't use public facilities.
They'll have stopped off from the Creole Food Festival. They'll be sitting in there like potted shrimp.
And if we don't let them in, their dad will hear about it.
Yeah.
I thought maybe this week we might go across to our travelling correspondent, Max, who's going to tell us a little bit about her time away through the Western Isles.
I've been on holiday.
Yeah.
I've been on holiday and I cycled 250 miles around the Western Isles and I'm feeling really fucking smug about it. So I'm going to make you listen to all my stories about being in the Western Isles. No, I had a very nice time. Thanks. Is that you asking me if I had a nice time on holiday?
And yeah. Want to know your stories.
You want to know my stories?
Tell the listeners what you called it.
So we're going to call it on we were going to call it Tour of the Outer Hebrides, but technically it wasn't just the Outer Hebrides because we also went to Skye. Mm. So Skye is also a Gaelic speaking area, so we decided to call it the Tour Nan Dottaman because that's the only Gaelic cultural reference we have in our lives.
And then I pointed out you'll be going Mahorsh, the islands.
We were
round and round.
Yes. So I literally cycled across six different islands, and the whole time I was like Mahorsh, the Western Isles, because Jamie pointed out to me. So yeah,
basically.
Did you get stuck?
Yeah,
then.
Shit.
Horse.
Sock puppets.
What I was going to say is, you're sort of doing the Paderig Post round.
I did on more than one occasion say a postman and sing Paderig Post to him, and I don't think he was too impressed. Because, we went through all the Gaelic speaking it, so we did. So do you want the rundown of all the islands that I've cycled through?
Then.
We cycled through Lewis. We cycled through Harris. Now, I know technically they're the same island, but it sounds better if I say them separately. We did Bernera. We did North Uist. We did Benbecula. We did South Uist. We hopped over to the mainland for a night on the Boysdale to Malik ferry. Had a wee night at Loch Morar.
Turns out
there's loads of signs up saying you can't wild camp there, but we wild camped anyway because we're such fucking rebels.
Why can't you wild camp there?
Oh, it's fishermen central. I know.
You can just sneak round the side.
We went away from
like where we were, they can never get to you.
Yeah. Well, we went there, and then we went over to Skye, and we went up through Skye, and then we got the Uig to Tarbert ferry back to Hannes, and did one fucking brutal day with a headwind the whole way from Tarbert to Stornoway, and finished there. So
nice.
It was good, and I'm feeling very smug. Feel like I have thighs of steel. I couldn't get my jeans on when I got back because I've done so much cycling. But it was lovely and we had very nice weather.
Nice. Did you have much whiskey?
No, I don't like whiskey. Whiskey smells like antiseptic. And
battery acid.
Yeah, and it burns. It gives me really bad indigestion.
It smells like a delicious bonfire.
Really delicious bonfire.
It smells like something you'd use to clean the toilet with. But we did have lots of beer. We had an interesting, so we were bike packing, which is what it's called.
Oh, right.
We just used to call it cycling holidays when we were kids, but apparently now the word is bike packing, and there's lots of YouTube videos about bike packing. We watched a lot before we went away.
Just cycling with stuff on your bike.
It is, yes. Yeah. Although I did get, there's quite a lot of people, not too many, but it was interesting because we met a few people doing similar routes, or there's the big, kind of the main route in there is, they call it the Barra to the Butt, or the Hebrides Way, Barra to the Butt, which is you go all the way from Barra, the south end of the Outer Hebrides, to the Butt of Lewis in the north. But that's a bit, the problem with that is then you have to cycle back to Stornoway again, and it's a bit boring, and also you can't get out of Barra, you've got to go back the way you came as well. So we didn't do the full route, but we met quite a lot of people on the way. But so I found that I'm really judgmental in looking at other people's packing arrangements on their bikes. It's unbelievable how badly packed some people's bikes were. As I said, we watched lots of YouTube videos.
Were they happy?
Well, no, they didn't look happy because their bikes were really slow because they had so much fucking luggage on them, honestly. So we managed to take all our stuff and our camping equipment, and all we had, both me and Craig, had two panniers on the back. Mm-hmm. We had a rack pack on top of that. And then in addition, Craig had the tent under his drop handlebars. And that was it. That's all we needed. And so when you saw people, they were cycling, they had trailers off the back. Lots of people who just had random like bundles of clothes with bungee cords over them. Nice. It's just like they were homeless.
I've been wanting to do it for years now. Like, just pack up my bike and go out. But it's, it's like finding a tent that's light enough and to carry a tent and stuff.
So, you just need to be... So, the tent that I've got is a two-man Van Gogh. It's not like ultra lightweight or anything like that. It is small. We can fit two of us in it. But you know, Craig's pretty tall and he can sleep in it. And that fitted totally fine. It was a perfect size for underneath his drop handlebars.
Right.
We put bungee cords around the thing and tucked it in. And then we each had a sleeping bag and a sleeping mat. And it didn't leave a whole lot of room for other stuff. But we also took a wee little camping stove.
Mm-hmm.
Took a little bag of pots and pans and things. There was room for food and there was extra room for beer. So when we stopped at the shop, we could get some beers for the night. So it can totally be done. You just need to be prepared to wear dirty clothes. Only took like one change of clothes. And I only took four pairs of pants with me and we were cycling for 8 days. And my plan was to wash them somewhere.
Tank.
I washed my pants on the ferry going from Loch Boisdale to Malick in the sink, and nobody came in, which was fine. But then I couldn't dry them. Then I hung them on a bush at Loch Morar to try and dry them, and it started to rain, and they got really wet.
You're the reason you occasionally go through the countryside and see like pants. Who the fuck has managed to do that?
It's because sometimes you hang your pants up to dry on a bush and they blow away. They didn't blow away, they just got really wet. So I did have to wear the same pants.
Jamie,
I didn't
say anything. You implied your own dirty jokes.
No, it wasn't a dirty joke at all. I was talking about the fact I washed my pants in a sink.
Well, I didn't.
That's the least sexual thing I can imagine.
I didn't imply anything. I just made a drum noise.
And then they were on a bush and got wet.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was one thing in particular I wanted to share with you on my holiday. One of the best things we went to, we found this little museum on South Uist.
Right.
So there's lots of lovely beaches, lots of sun, really nice. We were just outside a lot of the time. We went to one museum and it was in South Uist, and it was a brilliant wee museum.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about crofting life. I'm just going to lean over and get my laptop because I've got a photo to show you. So it had all these like...
This is great for the audience.
We can put this photo on the socials. Uh-huh. So it is good. So, no, it was like a museum of crofting life, and it was all the story about land reform in South Uist and things like that, and the skills and the traditions and things. Yeah. It was really good. And then...
One of my lecturers does a lot of work on the land reform in South Uist.
Yeah. Well, and then it had a special display about Kutch. I'm going to show you a picture now. We'll put it on the socials. Look, this was the section in the museum that was all about Kutch.
Material.
It genuinely says, no, it's about natural dyes.
Oh,
and
right.
It was talking about, basically, it was talking about all the different mosses and lichens that they use.
I wish you'd naturally dye.
To dye.
Oh, well done.
Boom.
So it turns out that all natural dyes produce a shade of brown or vary it to brown. There was hundreds of different types of brown. So Kutch, but the Kutch isn't a native dye though. The Kutch dye comes from two tropical trees, a species of acacia where the dye is made from seed pods, and an Asian palm where the dye is made from nuts. Kutch was traditionally used to colour sails and fishing nets in the Outer Hebrides. And then it's got a recipe. So to make your own Kutch, you need 50 grams of Kutch.
Uh-huh.
And then 4 pints of water, and you spring Kutch slowly to the boil and simmer for 30 minutes. And then it's got lots of different, it's got some wool and some silk and some cotton to show you the colour of Kutch.
Yeah, great.
So I thought that reminded me a lot of Kutch, funnily enough.
Kutch really is a personification of tropical as well. It makes absolute sense.
He's a very tropical
colour. Always thought the recipe for a perfect Kutch would be like one measure of Dave Grohl to two of Shaggy from Scooby-Doo and two of Teen Wolf.
But what colour would he be though?
Shaken Tom Messy.
Brown. It's a very appropriate.
It's a natural brown colour.
Shade of brown, yeah.
Oh, you bunch of dicks.
The other great thing in that museum as well, which I actually had to leave because I was giggling so much after we'd seen Kutch and the room about the dyes. So it was, as I say, genuinely interesting, all the things you'd normally see in a museum about life and things like that. And then the final room you went into, swear to God, it was a history of the priests of South Uist, and it was just a timeline, wow. And it was a photo of every priest they'd had with a wee biography next to him, and then it had some clothes from their favourite priests, and it had some books that the priest had donated. It was the most Craggy Island I have ever seen outside of Ireland. It was hilarious, and after that I just couldn't stop thinking it was like Craggy Island. We then, after that, we cycled past the cottage, the old hospital, which used to be run by nuns, and it was all modern now, and it had like an emergency ambulance entrance, stuff like that, and a big massive statue of Mary praying for everybody who was injured into the hospital, and just in a field in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, it was quite like Ireland.
to add a Fife component to this, so where, in terms of your recommendation about where to go, where would you say it was on a scale from good, which is Dunfermline, to not very good, which is Glenrothes? Which places would you say are Dunfermline, and which would you say were Glenrothes?
Okay, so the definite Glenrothes. In fact, it is quite like Glenrothes because it's all this weird 1950s, 60s architecture. It's Ballyvanagh on Benbecula, which is the only town on Benbecula. Well, it's the main town on Benbecula. It has a very good supermarket. It has an airport. It has no hotel or pub. So how can you have an airport
and no hotel
and
or
no
pub?
No hotel or pub. And we were very tired by the time we got to Ballyvanagh, and we were just wanting a pint. And the only place we found was a weird restaurant that said you can have a pint, but you've got to buy a plate of chips as well. Which I'm not going to say no to buying a plate of chips. But there was like literally no pub. And then we asked the woman if there was somewhere we could camp or if there was a hostel, and she looked at us like we'd just like got off the plane from Africa or something. She was just like, oh no, not around here, no, oh no. But anyway, there was, we found that. But yeah,
not the campers.
But yeah, so Ballyvanagh is basically, it was a military base that the MOD established. It was, the airport was a airfield.
Oh, that's right.
From a military airfield. And
much of Scotland, it's like a military base or deer forest.
Exactly. Yeah. And so most of the buildings in Ballyvanagh have been built then. So it is like, it looks like Glenrothes. It's like those housing schemes and these weird buildings. And now there's still a little military presence, but it's kind of been given over to civilian stuff. But it's very weird. And it's just this flat and beautiful beaches and stuff, but it's just the last thing you'd expect to see. So that was definitely Glenrothes. What would be Dunfermline? As in like,
what's the jewel?
What's the jewel?
Yeah, exactly.
The jewel
of your journey.
Like, okay, so it's not a.
It doesn't have to look like Dunfermline. No. Nothing looks like the magical city.
Sealbost and Harris.
Sealbost.
Absolutely gorgeous. So it's Luskintyre Bay. So there's like this beautiful, big, wide beach. Have you been there, Clutch?
No, but I've seen pictures.
It's classic. You come down over the hill, you're coming from Tarbet. We were cycling, I was telling Craig, there's a beautiful view coming, And of course, it does it every corner we went round was another fucking hill. It was just more and more hills. It's coming. But you come over the crest of the hill, and there's this huge big bay that opens up. When the tide's out, it's out for miles and miles. But round the corner from there, there's a little bit called Sealbost, and there's like a school in the Macher. It was a summer holiday, so it was closed. So they were renting out their, they were letting people put camper vans on their playground, which is cool. So it's like, you had to phone the janitor up and book your place. There's only like 3 spots, but you can go and stay at the school. But then you can also park your car and go through the sand dunes, and you come to this beautiful big sandy beach, and you've got the hills of Harris in the distance, and Tarrinzea, where they did that Castaway thing.
All right.
In the year 2000, that's over the bay from it as well. And it was the day we got there, there was a dog on a paddleboard, which just it was beautiful, it was sunny, and then there was a dog on a paddleboard. I was like, I've died and gone to heaven.
So Sealbost is the Dunfermline.
That's the Dunfermline of the Western Isles.
Recently there was the dog surfing championships of the world. I can't remember where it was.
Maybe. When the newsreader was reading it,
yes,
he just had such utter disdain for it. I kind of agree with him in that sense.
Although I saw him like 2 days before that talk about a whimsical story, and he was pissing himself laughing. So
what newsreader was that?
The guy who's always on during the day on BBC News.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
No, Jamie doesn't have a job.
He always he always jokes around with Thomas Schachenaffer, the weatherman.
Oh, Schachenaffer.
Yeah.
Was it Thomas Effenacher that was sick on air? Have you
probably,
seen
probably.
That?
Probably. He's done
have
everything.
You seen that?
He was also.
Oh, was
he also
was on
doing,
the radio. No, that was it. He was doing the. No, but I think it was Thomas Effenacher. It was like 6 a.m. It was like he was doing the weather to go with like one of the early morning breakfast shows, and he'd been up the night, like all night drinking. And he actually, you can hear him on air, like being sick into the bucket next to the microphone. It's like, you should look it up.
There's a great thing on YouTube, which I saw live years ago, a few years ago now, and it was Thomas Shackett talking, Thomas Shackenhafer, and that newsreader's name, I can't remember, and he said something, and obviously Thomas Shackenhafer was doing this on the monitor, yeah. But then the actual feed cut to him, he went like this, he had his middle finger up, listeners, and then he all of a sudden, he went like, oh, I was just tapping my face, and then cut away again. It's fucking great. Apparently he's a gay icon as well, I've read.
It's this the same... like anchor as well, he has like a constant like tiff with. There's like loads of videos of like them like having proper goes at one another live on air. It's he's a character. A character. Well worth the license fee.
He's some say with his character, some say helmet.
Well, thank you for regaling us with your tour and anecdote, man.
Yeah. Yes, if anyone would like to see more photos, I've got them up on my Facebook. I might share them. Or you could actually follow me on Twitter. I might tweet a picture a day for the rest of the week of pictures from my holidays. It's mostly me looking really sweaty and tired on a bike.
There are some absolute beautiful shots of you.
Me lying on the ground, me sticking my fingers up at Craig because he's taking photos of me when I'm explicitly saying don't take photos of me whilst I'm cycling.
It's Craig, amazing cyclist, who's probably not even sweaty.
Those
photos where you've clearly got to the summit of a hill and are so like knackered and happy with yourself that you've stopped and he's just like
follow me on Twitter. I am at MagCGF and you can see my holiday photos, which everyone will definitely want to see.
You're going to see such a big jump in your followers.
Mag's offering listeners the modern equivalent of a projector show of her holidays.
Totally, yeah. Absolutely.
Making all the pictures out of an extra sketch.
I always thought that was like a joke on sitcoms, and then one of my exes. Fat like uncles came back from holiday and actually did that. Like, I was like, oh, guys, come in, we'll look at all our holiday snaps on a projector. I was like, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening. Yeah. At first I thought it was hilarious just because of the absurdity of it, but then it went on for like 2 hours.
But then that has just evolved
into Instagram.
Yeah. To Instagram and Facebook, it's where you go on holiday and you just dump all your photos on. And
but then you can choose whether to look at them or not. Whereas when you're at someone's house and they get the photos out, it's a bit awkward if you're like, do you know what? I'm going to choose not to look at your photos.
Or when you follow them on Twitter and then they suddenly start sharing everything with you.
Just on the
personal DMs on Twitter. Hi, new follower. Here's all my photos.
A lot of my friends made fun of me recently, not long ago, because the gym I go to, they released a video of us training, but when it panned across, just at the times when you could see me and Dave was in between when we were doing like combinations on pads, so it looked like we were doing nothing.
Yeah.
And they released another photo just yesterday of us training. But I'm doing nothing. I'm holding pads for Dave. Uh-huh. But the photographer, they released this photo, but no one's doing anything in the photo. Everybody's like getting ready for the next thing.
They don't want to give away your secrets just in case you have to fight Cobra Kai in the next championship.
Oh my God. Do you know what? If it was me and Dave, Cobra Kai would totally win. We are the lowest rung of the net.
Come on. Every day you must be like wax on, yeah. And
Mr. Miyagi always just gently ribbing you.
He actually used wax on, wax off as like doing that to like clinch with people the other day. He said, yeah, do wax on, wax off. As like half a joke. But,
and everybody instantly knew what to do.
Yeah, but as a one. Yeah.
See that hand gesture that Jamie's doing right now, to me it looks like he's describing a massive pair of boobs.
Yeah, well.
A big round cupping motion there.
That would have a cupping one.
So, you know. Your Hawking sound is remarkable.
Many years of practice.
Maybe we should stop doing hand gestures on a podcast. Not really working tonight, is it?
And showing pictures. Yeah,
we're inclusive. We're signing as well.
I'm thinking of content for the socials here. You need to.
I'll stick it on the YouTube.
You need to do cross. You can stick it on the YouTube. I think you need to be more conscious of your cross-platform abilities.
Well, Mag, speaking of the socials.
Speaking of the socials, what, Jamie? Yeah. If the listeners wanted to see the picture of Kutch that I have, Kutch the die, and the recipe for Kutch, where would they find that?
They would find it on facebook.com/5clubpod or at 5clubpod, Twitter at 5club, email, it's new, ken@5club.co.uk, Ken. our new website as well, www.5club.co.uk.
Nice.
Draw.
And I guess we can fire the guy who's been signing for our podcast as well. So.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
What?
That's a waste of money. That's a shit joke cover. I meant to make it like 3 minutes ago.
do you know what aren't shit jokes? The top 10 jokes from the Edinburgh Festival.
Yay!
Which nice means that now stays in.
Thank you, Mark.
Great segue.
That didn't make any sense. It made sense in the flow of the conversation.
Okay. Has with the mark. I have not. So these were just published. Was it yesterday or today?
Yeah, it was either yesterday or today. Like every year, we do it. Like somebody publishes the top 10 best. Yeah.
Usually, Tim Vine's got about five of them.
Yeah, Tim Vine's not in it this year.
I don't think he's there.
No, I don't think he's there.
Yeah. He would be if he was there. But one of our all-time favorites, Dan Antopolsky's in there.
Holy shit!
So
I'm surprised they can fit one of his jokes into like a couple lines.
He does quite like he'll do a big long spiel in one and then every now and then hit you with a one-liner. Yeah.
I have to say, this is a very good, this might be my favourite, the Dan Antopolsky might be my favourite.
Holy shit.
Actually. So I'll start in no particular order, but not the top two on the Guardians list because they're probably the best ones. So we'll build up to them. Right. So this one's from Olaf Falafel.
Good name already.
Yeah. If you're being chased by a pack of taxidermists, don't play dead.
Yep, well done.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. A brief chortle.
Nah, only from Kutch. Kutch was the only one that laughed at that there.
I liked it.
I don't think that's bad. I don't think it's bad. I don't want to prejudice, though, because obviously I'm reading them coming. Okay. So the next one's from John Luke Roberts, who said, "How did the village people meet? They obviously lead such different lives."
I like that one, yeah.
Yeah, I like that one as well. This one's from Gronya Maguire. The Edinburgh Fringe is such a bubble. I asked a comedian what they thought about the North Korean missile crisis, and they asked, what venue was it on in?
No, that's a very French joke.
Yeah. You, get out of your fucking bubble, Gronya. Jesus Christ. Come on, you can do better than that. Okay, this one's from Phil Wang.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Waiting for the pause for the inevitable childish gecko. You utter racist. Why don't you get yourself down to Charlottesville?
Tiki torch in hand.
Yeah. So for Phil gives us this one. In the bedroom, my girlfriend really likes it when I wear a suit because she's got this kinky fantasy where I have a proper job. So I think that's quite nice. This one's from Evelyn Mock, which is actually a great name for a comedian.
Mock, cool. Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. My vagina is kind of like Wales. People only visit ironically. See, I don't love the joke, but I love a dig at Wales.
Yeah.
Because it's not a real place. This one's from Athena Kudblenu, and this is, relationships are like mobile phones. You'll look at your iPhone 5 and think, it used to be a lot quicker to turn this thing on. I mean, I think we've all heard stuff like that before.
That's a very,
come on, Athena. I think
that's poor. That
is poor.
I don't even know why that's there.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I was going to say something controversial for no apparent reason. I'm just going to wind back in.
It's not like you.
I don't know why I've done that. This one's from Caroline Maybe, which is actually foreshadowing something later on. But anyway, I'm very conflicted by eye tests. I want to get the answers right, but I really want to win the glasses.
So I heard that on Twitter the other day because an optician from Stirling had been in the show and he retweeted it, and she was really pleased that an optician had retweeted it, but it's not that funny.
Nah, that's alright.
Yeah.
So Rob Graham, apologies Rob if you're listening. This one's from Robert Garnham. Insomnia is awful, but on the plus side, only three more sleeps till Christmas.
That's pretty good.
It's a strong contender.
That is a strong contender. This one's from Paul Savage. Oregon leads America in both marital infidelity and clinical depression. What a sad state of affairs. Good wordplay.
That is a fantastic.
That's the sort of one that Tim Vine or Zaltzman line.
Yeah.
And this is the one from Dan Antipolsky, which again I think is a pretty
Is this
cool.
your top the top two? Are you giving us the top?
They were in no order.
You said you were going to keep the best two to last.
Yeah, that's pretty much what
okay,
I'm
right, okay,
yeah.
sorry. Is this the last one then? Is this the one that we should
Are
find funny?
Are you getting
funny?
Bored then?
Well, no, I'm just like trying to... Because nothing's beaten the YMCA one for me yet. Yeah, that was like one of the first
good.
Ones, so...
Yeah, I like that. I like that one a lot. And I like the sad state of affairs one. I think that's nice. But this one's from Dan Antipolsky, who we've all seen live, apart from Max, because she's culturally barren. So centaurs shop at Top Man, and also bottom horse. I've really ruined it. Can I do that again?
No, fuck you. No, I don't get to cut my joke.
It wasn't my joke. It's Dan Antipolsky's.
If you do
point.
Again, I won't laugh.
That was quite funny. So you can't cut.
I'm happy.
Yeah. Okay. Dan Antipolsky, center shop at Top Man, and bottom horse.
Yeah. So I'm not cutting that.
Again, apologies.
I do like it.
Apologies to Dan Antipolsky, who I'm sure is a regular listener. And Dan, just to say, we got your t-shirt size. We've just not had them made up yet.
Yeah.
You should tweet. You should like share them when you share the podcast. Tweet it to all these comedians and tell them that we rate their jokes, because I'm sure they would love it.
Yeah.
For us to sit here and rip their jokes apart or laugh at them.
And we'll say that. Yeah, Dan, do you want to hear your joke told badly?
Twice.
Yeah. So I'm really torn, because like my top three are clearly Dan Antipolsky's one, the sad state of affairs, and the Village People one. I really
like that first one.
I liked the first one as well.
The first one?
Yeah.
I forgot them. I forget jokes instantly.
If you're being chased by a pack of taxidermists,
nah.
I like that. I like that.
I like the imagery of the
Village People
one, because it's like obviously clearly they've all met at the YMCA, because that's how the Village People met. And or on the New York
just
gay
like,
scene,
just like
having
how
a whale
Dave...
of a time. But just like what?
Just like how David Bowie lived in space, like in Flight of the Conchords, he got that experience.
Oh yeah, Bowie in space. Yeah, that's good.
Right, what
but,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. But no, but I like the person who's written that joke, because obviously imagine them being a cowboy, an Indian, and a biker, and they've come from all these different walks of life. They come together to form this band.
Do you know what's really great? Like is when that. People explain jokes.
No, I agree with that. Like I was fully along with that narrative.
Yeah, it's very funny and sweet and cute. That's my favourite one.
I'm edging towards that, or Dan Antipolsky, because that's clever. And then the wordplay, those are three great jokes.
I think there's some cracking ones in there. There's about two stinkers, but
I think Athena can do a little bit better.
I'm not surprised that Glenn Wool's jokes didn't make it the Guardian list when we went to see him.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Were they brutal?
Grim.
A lot of them were pretty grim. Yeah. Really funny, but pretty grim. Yeah.
That's the thing. So these lists, really, it's one specific type of comedy. They're looking for one-liners to put in it.
Yeah.
And actually...
Your one-liner
the sort of comedy that...
And that's why Tim Vine usually dominates the list, because that's his comedy.
He's a genius at it.
But he is, he's very good at one-liners. He's very good at original one-liners as well. Like, not repeating either old ones or like something very similar to it, like repeating a theme.
It's one of my favourite Zaltzman jokes. It's better than this, but it's something like, I've got a phobia of German sausages. I fear the worst.
That's good. I've never been to see like a whole show of one-liners though, but I imagine it'd be quite tiring though.
I think so, yeah.
Like it's just boom, 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 boom.
That's what Jimmy Carr essentially was.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I find that really tiring. Like I was kind of bored after a while.
Because you want a narrative. Like I like comedy shows where there's a whole story going through
it. It's Tim Vine as well. I've seen Tim Vine, and you're right in what you're saying. It's like his jokes usually consistently are pretty funny all the way through, but by the time you've got 40 minutes of a show and it is just like one-liner, 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 and you laugh for the first 10, 15, mm-hmm. you're out of laughs.
You get laughs.
You can't
pace it as well.
That's
like,
it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Where something like Climb Wool, where it's like a story and then gag, story, funny story, gag, funny story, gag. You know, that, it does, it builds you up to then have a good laugh.
Shall we have some proper fights then?
Yeah, I think we should go into a fantasy fight club.
Ding, 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 ding.
Welcome, one and all, back to the specially constructed imaginary nine-sided nonagon for another fantasy fight club. I suggest you all settle in, for we have another tremendous fight card for you good folk out there tonight. If you're not familiar with the format yet, then I shall explain. Each of us pits two fighters into the nonagon to battle. These fighters can be anyone or anything. We then mull over their faults and merits and how we think the fight would go. We then all decide on a winner. Let's get ready to ramble.
Let's get ready, ready, let's get ready, ready, let's get ready to ramble.
Watch us wreck the mic.
Watch us wreck the mic.
Watch us wreck the mic.
Fight.
I'd just like to say as well, after last week's Desert Island Dicks, mm-hmm. I've had the Little Shop of Horrors thing stuck in my head, which was a soundtrack, which was great listening on the bus back from Edinburgh after a Whiskey Fringe. Fantastic.
Were you singing out loud?
I was best close. Best close.
So, who's got a fight for us tonight?
I've got a fight.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to American sitcoms.
Okay.
And only because I'm actually catching up on more recent series of Parks and Recreation. And then I thought I'd pit one of the most beloved characters from Parks and Recreation,
mm-hmm.
Ron Swanson.
Yes!
Uberman Ron Swanson, against the patriarch of the Bluth family from Arrested Development, George Bluth Sr.
Ooh. Good fight. So, I'm sure you're all aware that Parks and Recreation is my favourite TV show of all time ever, and I'm super obsessed. I thought you were going to put Leslie in there, and then I would just go on a massive rant about how
she's
amazing.
Quite lame. What?
Oh no!
She's just like an every woman, which carries the rest of the comic cast.
But she's like.
Oh, he's trolling.
You're winding me up, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's right. Okay, I'm not going to go into that because we're going to talk about.
Wow, she went red.
So I have a signed photo of Leslie Knope on my office wall, which is definitely real and wasn't just my colleague signing it at Christmas for a Secret Santa. And I also have one of the best presents I ever got bought, but I've yet to have an appropriate time to wear it. A few years ago for my birthday, my mate Ryan brought me a handmade wooden brooch of Ron Swanson. It's Ron's face with a little bit underneath that says, I'm Ron fucking Swanson.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's got I'm Ron fucking Swanson written on it. So, and it's sort of a nice brooch that you would wear on like a blazer or something like that. Can't wear that in a political meeting, can I? Especially given his politics don't really align with my own.
That there shouldn't be government.
Yeah, no, it's like...
Particularly not during the like, poppy season as well, so you've got to wear a poppy.
I might wear it instead of a poppy.
No, well...
Or I could have it with my white poppy, alongside it. But yeah, Ron Swanson's one of the best characters ever created in sitcom history. He's amazing.
Do you know what the thing with Ron Swanson is? Is that he's great, but also Nick Offerman, that plays him, is just an amazing all-round kind of guy. He is like the manliest man feminist you'll ever set eyes on. I think he certainly puts himself out there as being a dyed-in-the-wool feminist, and at the same time as a manly man that goes out, drinks whiskey, turns wood.
Yeah,
the whole thing.
I mean, his wood workshop is phenomenal.
And he did. So I think there's in recent years there's been quite a blurring of the lines between Nick Offerman
and Ron Swanson.
And I think that's a deliberate character. So a lot of the time you see him, he's essentially still in Ron Swanson character.
But I think
as
he
Nick
put
Offerman.
A lot into Ron Swanson. I think
I heard an interview with him where he said he before he did Parks and Rec he was doing stand up as himself.
Mm-hmm.
but it was essentially as Ron Swanson. He kind of created this stand-up character for himself that went on stage and just talked really dryly about woodwork and self-defence and survival skills in the forest. And then the producers of Parks and Rec went to see that. They saw him and loved him and kind of built the Ron Swanson character around it. So I think there's a bit of a blur in the lines between the two. But, like, Ron is your ultimate survivalist and does, like, could take anyone on in a fight. Mm-hmm.
But I would say he is not violent in any way in the show.
No.
Yeah. No, so he would never attack people, but if you attacked him...
You'd think he'd be like a bear. So he's a bear in your campsite, right?
Yeah.
But,
but then Bluff Sr. sort of essentially start running a jail. And,
he did. He had... So, but I think Bluff Sr. would pay somebody to fight on for him. I don't think he would ever have to fight him himself.
He also did swap places with his brother. And then lived in the Mexican desert, or well, the border. Yeah, it was the Mexican desert on the border, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of like survival, he's not bad as a survivalist himself as well.
George Bluth can do anything pretty much. Yeah, that was my kind of point about like George. Like, there's more of the patriarchal kind of like godfather type figure about George Bluth Senior, whereas. Ron Swanson is very much a sort of in-your-face manly man.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you an offer you can't refuse. There's always money in the banana stand.
I was just going to say, where Ron would maybe have some money squirreled away in case of something happened.
No, he only has gold. All Ron's assets are gold. And they're buried in secret locations.
So he's got gold buried in secret locations, whereas George... always has money in the banana stand.
Also, like, Leslie would clearly jump in to back Ron up in any fight because she's like the most loyal, wonderful friend a man could ever have.
And Buster has a hook for a hand.
That is very true. Yeah.
And was in the army.
Buster was in the army.
He was bad at army.
God, I really need to watch Parks. I've only seen like the first two series of Arrested Development, and I'm not. I need to like catch up and watch the later.
It's
ones.
Really good. The later series was series four, though, the Netflix series.
Yeah,
it's a bit different in its format.
It is different. It's weird.
It's weird, but it still works. Mm. I think.
Yeah, totally.
I'm kind of intrigued to see what they'll do with the next one whenever it happens.
Yeah, sort of season two and season three. I think were kind of the highlights. I was going to put a point in terms of the fight as well about like Ron Swanson's weak point, which is not George Bluth Senior's weak point, and that is standing up to strong female characters. Because Ron Swanson, for all his tough guy, Leslie wraps him relatively round her finger, and so does his two ex-wives. Whereas George Bluth Senior will have a blazing row with Lucille, but that is only because they have a really complex and elaborate plan which could go wrong in many different ways, but they're actually secretly working together and then against each other and together again.
That's a point. So you know, so Ron Swanson, so Nick Offerman is married to Megan Mullally, who plays Tammy too. That's a good comedy duo.
Yeah, that was because I didn't know that until not that long ago, and it was just like it actually makes sense.
Yeah,
it makes a lot of sense those two being together. Yeah,
Ron Swanson is sort of he's emblematic as well of like what Trump's trying to do in America with government. Is he just putting people into departments who hate government and hate those departments, like the Environmental Protection Agency, just trying to tear it down, which is essentially what Ron tries to do as well.
Well, but he says he tries to do that, but then he's very happy. He knows that Leslie does a very good job and he's very happy to let Leslie do her job.
I think that's the thing, though, is that he does... if somebody does that role well, he's happy to see them do that well.
Because it's yin and yang.
Yeah. Exactly. They work well. Yeah. And have you seen it right the way to the end? Have you seen, like, the
no.
last...
No, I've not seen the last, like, five episodes.
Right? I've only seen the first series, which everybody says is the worst series. So.
Yeah, the first series is the worst, definitely. Well, it's not too much of a spoiler to see. So, you know how the final series, they jump forward to 2017, actually. I just realised. This is, like, yeah. So, they jump forward a few years, and you end up seeing what happens to everybody. And he ends up, Leslie ends up in charge of all the national parks for like the whole of the east of America, which is like a total dream job. And she gives Ron his own national park to look after. And so he ends up being a ranger out on a national park. And he just has his canoe and it's one with lots of lakes in it. And so you just see him, he's just like paddling his canoe around all day, looking out over his national park, keeping an eye on it. And it's his perfect job because he actually loves parks. He loves being in parks and stuff. So I think it's all a bit of a facade. Like, yeah, he's a libertarian. He doesn't like believe in big government and stuff like that. But he's all for defending parks. Yeah, parks right. are important.
Well, I'm going to call it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm going to vote for Ron.
I'm going to vote for Ron because I bet he's got some fucking amazing handmade weapons on if he really needed to. So yeah. You're right. I think George Bluth would like run rings around him and try and be all crafted and stuff like that, and then Ron would just come out with his homemade mache.
Yeah, I think that's it. Is Ron would have some... I think he's also probably good at bare knuckle boxing. I'm pretty sure he's boxed a bear at some point. Yeah. I don't think George Bluth ever has. Yeah. So I'm with Ron Swanson. I also have a bit of a man crush on it. So yeah.
Great, Tash. I'm good for Ron Swanson.
Yay. Ron wins.
We've got a winner.
Awesome. I'll wear my Ron badge for the next podcast. Ron fucking Swanson.
Good.
Okay, so I've got one, which I'm going to do because I've got my research all up on my laptop here. So, although I was on holiday, I did manage to catch an impressive amount of the World Athletics Championships. Oh, yeah. Does anyone watch that?
Yeah,
I fucking love the athletics. It's like... I mean, I'm not really into watching too many sports on telly, but I do like the athletics because there's always something different on.
Yep.
So I spent all weekend, we got back on Friday night, and I spent all, like, from 6 o'clock onwards on Saturday and Sunday watching the athletics. So I'm going for an athletics themed one.
Mm-hmm.
I am going for arguably, in fact, the greatest athlete Britain's ever produced, Sir Mo Farah, versus late 80s, early 90s entertainment fun-loving Chris Akabusi.
Oh, a wooga!
When I mentioned this to Craig, he said I was racist because I was just pitching two black British men against each other. But no, there's a backstory to this. So, as some of you...
Wait a minute, did Chris Akabusi take drugs too?
So, as some of you might have seen in the press, after Mo Farah, Sir Mo Farah...
Yeah, Mohammed now he wants to be called.
Well, but this is the thing. Anyway, so after his...
Just his deny his wishes.
Should we just get two tickets to Charlottesville? No, next other on the coach.
No.
You're the guy, you're a person who calls Muhammad Ali Cassius Clay.
No, okay, but... Mohammed fan. Has he actually said that though?
Yeah,
in a press thing. So the thing is,
because essentially I think the whole Mo thing was so that like the Daily Mail wouldn't absolutely hate him.
But also he's always
like the British press in general, it's harder to get press if you call Mohammed than Mo.
He's always Mohammed on like race sheets and stuff like that. He's never actually, I think it was the BBC that decided to call him Mo and he never really corrected them, and now actually he's realised I'm quite annoyed. But this is the thing, Mo Farah, like the greatest athlete we've ever produced, he's won 10 medals at world championships in the 5,000 and the 10,000 metres. He's done the double-double at the Olympics, which only like two or three other people have done.
Yep.
Bloody amazing. Still gets an incredibly hard time from the press for it. And one of the reasons I think is because he's not... He's very serious, as you have to be if you're competing at that level. He takes his training really seriously. He's not on the telly all the time. He doesn't do loads of interviews. He's not the best person to interview. He's not hugely interesting other than doing his MoBot thing. People haven't really warmed him. Chris Akabusi, on the other hand, back in the day, where he wasn't... So I think Chris Akabusi won... his best thing was he got a silver in the men's 4x100 relay at the Olympics in 19... No, he got a bronze, actually. Oh, no, sorry, he got a silver in 1984 at Los Angeles. Other than that, it was all bronzes. They won a gold in 1991 at the Tokyo relay. But as an individual athlete, not that great. But everyone remembers him because he was this big personality and he did his awoga thing and he went on to do telly and stuff like that. So people love it. So I think it poses this interesting question about, do we want our athletes to be amazing, really good athletes who are at the top level of the sport but a bit boring? Or do we like our athletes to be entertainers and fun but not actually that good?
There's a similar argument in combat sports as well, which is a guy recently won a title, Tyron Woodley. Well, he kept his title by stuff. This guy was facing a jiu-jitsu master who kept trying to take him down, and he stuffed like 26 takedowns or something, but he hardly hit him. Mm. But he still won on points. But it was like, it was boring as shit, and it's also an entertainment pay-per-view business as well.
Aye.
So it's kind of like, technically... Yes, you did well, but it was still boring and crap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it depends on how you look. I think if you want to be remembered as like a Muhammad Ali, he's not the best boxer who's been in the last century by a mile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was the social and cultural impact that he had as well, which made him bigger. And I think it's the same in sports. But I think Mo Farah will be, like, as remembered more than Chris Akabusi because he was, like, much more successful.
Yeah.
I think also the things like doing the Mo and...
The MOBA.
And that's...
For listeners, I'm doing the MOBA.
You're clapping your hand.
It's a shame you can't. It's a shame you can't see his gestures, officers, because it was a callback to the YMCA. Right?
Jamie, that joke is staying in.
It's because it was a thing about the what's his face, Bolt. Usain's Bolt. So it was like his version of that, which felt a little bit tacky at the time, but then actually everybody rallied around it.
Ironically, I watched the TV show where he was encouraged to do it, and it was actually a sports panel show with James Corden, which was fucking terrible. Because James
a
Corden, because he knows nothing about sport, and he's a fat arsehole. I don't like to body shame anyone, but he's a fat arsehole.
I read an interview with James Corden about, like, he's shown the States and whatnot. His only goal is to remain relevant.
Mm.
Like, there's nothing about being funny, or there's nothing about it's about relevance, and that is his only goal. And that just makes me hate him even more. Why bother if you don't want to do anything other than just try and be relevant? What does that even mean?
It means you're an oxygen thief.
Oh, yeah, I don't like him.
Back to the fight. Are they fighting? Like, are we going to have a race? Because what was Chris Akabusi?
No,
what was his?
He was 400 meters and 400 meter hurdles.
Right.
So you couldn't pit him against Mo Farah.
Two totally different.
They're very different. They're very different.
You could have it at like 900 meters.
Well, so Mo Farah is very good at the mile. Like, he started out at the mile and worked his way up and stuff.
Or just right round the track once. So that'd be...
That's 400 metres.
No, sorry, twice. 800
metres. Well, you could... I mean, that would be interesting because the thing is, Mo Farah is actually a really good sprinter, which is why he does well, because he's a really good tactician. He can control a race and he can hold people back and then absolutely destroy them in the sprint.
Yeah.
So it'd be pretty fast over the sprint. Also, just to point out, if we're holding this now, Chris Akabusi is now 58.
doesn't look as fit
as he used to. So I think Mo Farah is possibly in a better form than Chris Akabusi. Also, interesting. Now, I was always a big fan. I thought it was a lovely, lovely man, Chris Akabusi. And but my interesting fact to find out on Wikipedia, which did change. I'm going to be honest, and I am prejudiced this way, but this did change the way I felt about Chris Akabusi. In August 2014, Akabusi was one of 200 public figures who were signatories to a letter to The Guardian expressing their hope that Scotland would vote to remain part of the United Kingdom at the referendum.
Holy shit. Holy shit.
Him and Eddie Izzard.
Him and Eddie Izzard tried to tell us what to do. And David Bowie. He paid for it, didn't he? At least Bowie paid for it. Yeah.
Before we end, can I tell you my Mo Farah story?
Have you met Mo Farah?
I was walking. I was coming out of Parliament and walking down the embankment, and there's embankment gardens on the way to where my old office was, and I was just walking down there, and there was a guy sitting on the park bench, just like an embankment gardens, like on his own. Like he was dressed in what I would consider sporty attire, not like running spikes or anything like that. And very close to me, and I looked over at him, and I did that thing of, I recognise you, I really recognise you. And then he looked at me, and he saw that I was doing the same thing. And he smiled.
Looking at you going, I really...
No, sorry, he knew I'd recognised him. Oh, God.
It's budget Jared Butler.
Mo Farah starstruck.
And then for some reason, did not twig it's Mo Farah. Mo Farah is like a really... like he's one of the sports stars you absolutely recognise.
I just walked past. I don't know, there's always that thing when it's like slightly out of place. Where you're just like, why do I know you?
Yeah.
Because you're not expecting to see Mo Farah sitting. Huh? Yeah. So you don't instantly go there.
How long was it before you realised?
I was probably in another cool celebrity story. I was probably about the exact point walking up Villiers Street where I hit Matthew Perry of Friends Me with my gym bag. He has no chin whatsoever. Like, absolutely, face goes right into chest.
That's because all the years of alcohol and drug abuse.
that's harsh.
He follows the George Lucas school of life.
Yeah. But Mo Farah is absolutely tiny.
Really?
Yeah.
He is 1.75 metres high, according to this. I don't know what that is in feet and inches.
No, he's very, very small.
Chris Akabusi is, because I've got my research here, 1.85 metres high, which is 6 foot one.
Do we have any details on the reach?
No reach. We've got weight, though, but I don't know if this is weight now or weight when competing. Because Chris Akabusi is 81 kilos. Mo Farah is 58 kilos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, I think that's I weigh more. In fact, I totally weigh more than that. Like, he's pretty small.
Then, yeah, he's tiny.
Yes, but
and always
he's made to run though. He's the perfect East African
sinewy.
Physique.
Sinewy.
Is he a drug street?
It was posed as a question.
Well,
lawyers.
He did. I don't know if you saw the interview he did on Sunday morning.
I did not see it.
He did because he didn't win. So on Saturday night was his last championship race, and he only came second. He got the silver. So he didn't do. He did a lap of honour and he said bye to everybody, but he didn't do like the big press conference. He did it on the Sunday morning instead, and he came out, and before anybody had even asked him questions, he was on the defensive right away, and he just said, "I am so fed up. Of no matter what I say here, you're going to report it wrong and you're just going to talk about, you're just going to put speculation on my winnings and I've done it hard and, you know, I've done it fair and square." I have to say, so his coach, Alberto Salazar, is under investigation. Yeah. People who he've trained with, I think for a long time he ran with a Canadian guy called Galen Rupp and they used to work as a team.
Yep.
And he's not been on the scene for a while. I think he might have received a ban, but Mo Farah hasn't. And being an athlete of his stature, he will have been tested left, right, and centre, and all over the place, and in every orifice. Yep. And if he is cheating,
you'd hope and you'd think, and if he is, that he's doing it very cleverly.
I don't think athletes
can get away with it in the same way like cyclists.
No, I don't think they can. And the other thing about Mo Farah is he's done really amazing. Because as I said before, he's a tactician. Mm-hmm. He's nowhere near world. He's nowhere near the. He's never come near the world record for his distances.
That's it, yeah,
like all the faster. The world records for his distance were set in the late 90s and early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So he's not running ridiculously fast times. He's just running it in a way that's really difficult. Has been difficult up to now to beat him. But as you saw on Saturday night, they figured out how to beat him. He didn't win the 10,000 on Saturday.
When you're talking about the records, is the reason they've not been broken since then is because, well, you know, there's a little cheating going on.
Yeah, although those records are largely helped by Kenyan and Somalian and Ethiopian athletes who genuinely just train in the back of beyond with not very much money.
And
they're just fucking amazing at running.
And there's another thing about a lot of the runners that come from the Africas is that a lot of them do barefoot running, barefoot running as well, which is actually where they say that you gain the advantage.
And also running at altitude as well, they're often really high up and stuff. I think some of the accusations for Mo Farah come from the fact that he did make this big step up and this big progress when he went out to America to train with Salazar. But when you see him interviewed, he explains it as that
he just took his running more seriously.
He's gone from being with his family and his kids and stuff like that, which he loved, but being around friends and training and living in the same place, which means you've got lots of distractions, to up and moving himself on his own to the other side of the world where he didn't know anybody, and all he did was run. All he did was train with a new coach. And that's when you see those kind of, you know, you see that kind of progress. Yeah. So no, I don't think he is a drugs cheat.
I have to say, I just posed that as a question, but I don't think so either. I've read into a lot of sporting accusations of doping and things like that. Justin Gatlin is a cunt.
Yeah.
But
he got booed. Did you hear him? He got booed multiple times in the stadium.
Yeah.
I have a very opposing view, but we don't have time to go into it.
All right. Do you believe the one he was malicious? The malicious
served his time.
Justin Gatlin? Oh, you think...
No, he did. Well, he didn't. He grassed up somebody.
Yeah. So, just like people get released from jail, I think.
No, but he's been caught twice, though.
Yeah.
He's been caught twice. He should... No, if you get caught a second time, you should have a lifetime ban. Like, you
the
really
first,
should.
The first time was dodgy. The second time was in no way dodgy.
Yeah, no.
He absolutely cheated like
it
fuck.
It doesn't... Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of... But
he was supposed to have a lifetime
ban. But that's
ban.
Only, that's only if you care about punishing someone rather than trying to stop less people take performance-enhancing drugs.
But surely if you knew...
He's not taking them now, as far as we know. And it's like saying the death penalty stops murders... But states with a death penalty have higher rates of murder generally.
Well, it's a bit different.
No, I think it's
kind of the same thing because it's the end of your career.
Yeah, but you're not going to take performance enhancing drugs if it's the end of your career. And
no, but people definitely do.
But then that's their problem.
Yeah,
like it's not like.
We should do this. We should do this the next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's another thing. Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool. Calling it. Okay. Yeah. What are you going for then? Chris Akabusi versus Mo Farah.
Akabusi is fun, but I quite like Mo Farah.
I used to.
He also sells me corn.
He does advertise corn, yeah.
And I don't mind a corn sausage, so.
Yeah, I'll go with Mo Farah.
Go Mo Farah.
There's a joke in there somewhere.
I used to find Chris Akabusi incredibly annoying. I've now dialed him down to probably all right, but moderately annoying. Mm-hmm. Also, in this current climate as well, I think I'm happy to support a Muslim. Because it's going to absolutely get it right around your Farages and your Trumps and your neo-Nazi wank bags. Mm. So on that, as well as being an incredible athlete.
Mm.
And I'm sorry I didn't recognise him. Mohammed, I'm sure you're listening. Again, you need an extra small on your t-shirt sizes.
Got that. We should make all these t-shirts and just send them.
Well, I'm going to go for Mo Farah just because I like him. And a similar reason, I hate like the Daily Mail when they had Mo Farah on the front, because it really annoys me, because he's a fucking Somali, he's not a refugee, which people said he was, he's a Somali immigrant, who's like, and how do they usually treat Somali Muslim immigrants?
Exactly.
Oh, it pisses me off so much.
But you're okay if you can run for Britain.
Yeah, exactly. That's fucking annoying, But Mo.
Yeah, but I do think he's been given a much harder time of it than than a white British or even a British born black man.
Think about Tim Henman.
Well, no, coming to Chico. But yeah, I think anyone else.
I mean, the Canadian got better rep than him.
I think I think if it was a different colour of skin or a different religion or had been born in this country, he would get an awful lot more coverage. He's never made it to the final three of the Sports Personality of the Year award,
which is
insane. Never. He's been nominated for Sports Personality, but you know how they do like the third, second, and then the winner one. He's never made it to the final three, so I don't think the British public have embraced him in the way that they should.
I don't think they do track and field enough, though, in terms of the way that.
Yeah,
works.
Well, but you would think in like 2012 he would have got it.
Was it
Jess Kennis or someone like that?
I don't know.
Was it
Jess Kennis? But yeah, that's Jess Kennis has come second before. She's never won it.
Was it not like Chris Hoy or somebody?
Oh, Chris Hoy and cyclists.
Chris Hoy is awesome.
If cyclists can win it, then track and field athletes. Anyway.
He's a solid man. Anyway.
My thighs are like Chris Hoy's now after my cycling. I can't get my jeans on.
No, your waist is not like Chris Hoy's thighs. I kid you not. They're fucking huge.
Okay, right.
Anyway.
Mo Farah, I'm going Mo Farah as well. Sir Mohammed, we salute you.
Yeah, done. Jamie.
All right, we'll go through this one quickly. So my fight is between... Oh my god.
It's Jamie's left block and Jamie's right.
My fight is between the former... It's between two terrible sports broadcasters who I fucking hate with a passion, carrying on from years back.
Okay.
So the first one is former WBC, IBF and WBA super middleweight champion, Carl Froch.
All right.
Who does the commentating for boxing on Sky Sports, who he always finds a way to shoehorn into his stories that he knocked out Groves in front of thousands of people.
Yeah.
He does interviews with fighters.
We watched that in the pub in London.
We did watch that in the pub in London,
Oh my god, he's so fucking annoying. Okay. Anyway, him and the other worst one, John Inverdale.
John Inverdale.
Now, to make it fair, because Froch is a boxer, he's got his arms and legs tied. Like his arms behind his back and his legs tied together.
So he's just got a headbutt John Inverdale.
Yeah, yeah. But he's got a lot of tenacity. And, you know, he did knock out Groves in front of thousands of people.
Inverdale's just an arsehole, though.
What was Inverdale's sport? Was he a rugby player?
I think he played rugby like, up to like, university or let's say.
Right.
He never played, yeah.
So he's never been like a professional sportsman.
No.
Just.
I think of Inverdale as like a real life Alan Partridge.
Yeah. What was it he said? Did he not get in trouble for making misogynistic comments?
Yeah, Marion Bartoli, the tennis player. He's like, well, it's good she's a great tennis player because she's not a looker.
Oh, yeah. He said other things as well.
Also at the 2012 Olympics.
He used to head up the F1 coverage on ITV.
The thing. He commentates sports he knows nothing about. So he was doing interviews with boxers at the 2012 games. Or was it 2016? Rio, actually. Probably both. But he was fucking shit. He didn't know what he was talking about. He was interviewing people. And he had Steve Redgrave with him as well. Yeah. And he kept talking over Steve Redgrave.
Well, I remember
constantly.
Twitter at the time constantly like going daft about like Steve Redgrave, like just like the daggers he was throwing him and how much hate Steve Redgrave like threw his way. What are you doing, Max? Sorry, Max has decided she's got bored and gone on her laptop.
Sorry guys, I was looking up comments. I was trying to look up comments that Don Inverdale had made, and then it started playing a video on my laptop. So I do apologize.
The other thing is, as the anchor for the Six Nations coverage as well, the man seemingly doesn't watch any games apart from England for a start.
Yeah.
Has no frame of reference apart from England, and just doesn't have a fucking clue what he's talking about in rugby as well.
No.
You can actually like, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but I look into the kind of eyes of like. Jeffy, forgot what his full name is, Keith Wood, Jeremy Guskett and things like that.
Yeah.
And you look at like the sheer level of like disdain when Inverdale is putting another inane question to them. And it's like, they really should have done more there. And they're Jeremy Guskett's thinking 10 moves ahead. And working through the play. So, Inverdale is just absolutely fucking dreadful.
It'd be fine if he didn't, as he doesn't know anything, if he set up the other co-presenters well.
Yeah, exactly.
But he doesn't. It's the tennis that does my head in when I watch it. Because I only watch Wimbledon, really. Sometimes the US Open, because I'm up at silly times. Mm. And he knows... He seems to watch all of his tennis and seems to know less about tennis than I do.
Yeah.
And he just talks about... It's not like for cycling where when they do a baking recipe, it's funny and it's good. It's just...
It's because there's nothing happening.
There's nothing happening. Yeah. Whereas tennis, there's constantly shit. And he's talking about this shit while there's stuff happening. It's like, does my head in.
So I'm looking up controversial things he said. So first of all, after his comment about Marion Bartoli, he blamed it on hay fever. Which is a very Partridge thing to say. So anyways, he was confused by hay fever. Also, another thing, during BBC Radio 5 Live's coverage of the 2015 Cheltenham Festival, he said instead of rose tinted glasses, he said rose cunted glasses.
Yes, he did.
I have no reason. That's amazing. Rose cunted glasses. Oh dear.
I'll tell you what, he's no Claire Balding.
Yes, no. I was about to say
he's the antithesis of
Claire Balding. It's like, it's just, are we going to roll out again another white man? Or we couldn't possibly let a woman do the commentation on that. We need to have a white man do it.
Because no matter what sport or where you stick Claire Balding, she has top notch.
At the very basic level, she does research.
Yeah.
Whether she's doing rowing or whether she's doing equestrian or whether she's doing crafts.
She's amazing on crafts. She's so good on crafts.
She obviously loves dogs. But like, honestly, just put her in a situation, she just does a bang up job.
Yeah.
Whereas Inverdale swans in with more makeup than a pantomime dame. Like basically blithering inanity after inanity. When you know that you know more about the sport than he will ever know.
See, I feel like Inverdale's losing this fight hard.
Yeah.
But I just
Carl
want
to say Froch is one of the most basic humans.
I've never seen Carl Froch do commentary.
Carl Froch is a basic human. He is like just a he's not really anything.
He recently interviewed Floyd Mayweather and managed to shoehorn in even an interview with Floyd Mayweather about knocking out Groves in front of tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
But people aren't sure now if he's become self-aware and like is trolling with it, because he says it so often now that people are like, he can't still just be saying it. He has to know that everybody takes a piss out of him.
Do you think he's hit the singularity?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what's happening with him anymore.
He's a man who really does transmit that he's been punched in the head about 20 times.
Yeah. Where Emberdale should be a man that's been punched in the head.
And I can't take him seriously with his nose that he got fixed, because his nose was always really squint, because he was a boxer. Mm. But he got it fixed after boxing. Yeah. And I look at him and I'm just like, that's not Carl Froch. That's a man pretending to be Carl Froch. Yeah, it's really weird.
Do you think, no, Carl Froch is maybe still quite early in his career in commentating and he might get better? Whereas John Everdale's got no excuse. Like, he's got decades of experience behind him and he's still a dick.
He might do, but... And at least Carl Froch has beaten somebody. And has the experience.
Got some experience. Yeah,
that's true. He at least, and he
knows
boxing
what it's
analysis
like to be a professional sport
is okay, although he does relate it back to his own fights far too often.
But then if that's
you'll
what he knows,
that's
that, what he knows.
Though.
But
yeah, hopefully he'll learn.
I'm going to call it, and I'm going to call it for Frosch.
Oh, undeniably, on my list of the world's biggest oxygen thieves, John Inverdale is definitely quite strongly up there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I honestly, to the point where I have considered and have switched coverage if there's something else available because Inverdale's on the TV. He's just appalling.
So Froch.
Froch.
Yeah. I'm going to go for Froch because, yeah, Inverdale's much worse and Froch at least is becoming self-aware like Skynet or something.
I think Froch would kick Don Inverdale into
his legs. His feet are tied together.
Just
headbutt him.
He would headbutt him in his rose cunted glasses.
Yes.
I've got a fairly quick one. It is the battle of the octogenarian Michaels. It's Michael Caine.
Michael B.
No.
Wow.
No. Michael Caine versus. Michael Parkinson.
Oh my god, both of them are massive Tory wanks.
Yeah. And what annoys me more about Michael Caine is that I grew up on a council estate and look where I got to. So fuck off, Michael. Yeah.
So I'm going to say something controversial here. I will take the flack off you.
Michael Penn, Michael Caine's never offered me a free pen. Michael Parkinson has.
No, but you're not over 60, Cut. You can't sign up for the Sun Life over 50 plus.
So I think this comes from, I've never had a granddad. Like, both my granddads died before I was born.
Oh, wow, this is deep.
Well, I generally find men in their 80s and you know, late. Well, actually, you know,
sexually 80s. Arousing.
Oh, you do? Like, the guy from Thinking Aloud. What's his name?
Oh, that's Laurie Taylor? Laurie Anderson?
Anderson?
Taylor?
Something like that.
Anyway.
Yeah, you
well, that's his voice.
And he is like 80.
No, I didn't realise he was like 80. I used to just listen to him on the radio.
To be fair, I forgot to see him as well.
Yeah,
so,
no, he's just really intelligent. That's something else. No, I find him quite... I find
it's Alan Alda for
quite
me.
Uncomfortable. Oh,
he's
Alan Alda.
He was in MASH.
Yeah. And he's also in West Wing.
No, I generally find... Like, I find men of that age a bit... creepy and uncomfortable, and I wouldn't want to be in a room on my own with either of them.
Werther's original.
Yeah, a little bit like they might try and give me sweeties and pat me on the head and ask me what I want to be when I grow up, even though I'm in my 30s.
Why your pants are in a bush.
So, I don't know. Like, I find both of them a little bit, I don't know. They just make me feel a bit uncomfortable.
But who do you think would win in a fight?
I don't really care because I don't like either of them.
do you know, there is one thing I will say, like going on the merits of how well they do their profession. I actually like a lot of Michael Caine films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he's
a great actor.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say he's a great actor.
I think he is.
I think he's a decent actor. I think he had high points, like Harry Palmer. Mm-hmm. Period and things all the old films and things like that, like Ipcress File, all that kind of thing. Really enjoyed those ones, and I thought he brought something good to Batman as well, like as Alfred. I thought
Inception
that was
as well.
Inception, he was really good in that too.
Yeah. When he played Alfred, he was just taking on an old role that he played when he did Alfie.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's quite right.
But
yeah,
like Alfie's a great film.
Yeah, Alfie's
a
very good film.
It's harrowing, but it's a really good film, and he's really good in it. And of course, The Italian Job as well. I mean,
yeah. Oh, of course.
Oh, of course. I was watching him last night as well in Kingsman as well.
Yeah,
and he's very good in that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Playing a person he wants to be.
But like I've read his autobiography as well. It's like, what's it, something to Elephant Castle to Hollywood or something like that.
Yeah, it makes sense. He grew up in the Heffalump, yeah.
Yeah, he's the thing is with that, I've read the book, I've also listened to the like the audiobook of it.
Oh my god, you're a president of the Michael Caine.
I've read it and listened to it.
I like Michael Caine.
Does he read it himself?
But he does, yeah.
My name is Michael Caine. I am a nosy neighbour.
Stop throwing those bloody spears at me.
But you're saying that you find them sort of ultimately creepy and like, you know.
Well, I don't know if I create uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. Whereas what I quite like is that he's got to that point in his life. It's like, Paul McCartney as well, and
have they both paid no tax?
No, they've got to a certain
drugs cheats.
Where when they tell stories, they tell them in that sort of like kind of quite interesting, fascinating way, and they'll sit and reminisce, and that's what the autobiography is about. Well, just like him reminiscing about different times, different films that he's done, different people he's met,
how he hates left wing people.
Yeah. Doesn't really.
How he started out on a council estate, so everybody could become a famous actor like him, and they'd be rich. If he can do it, why can't anybody else?
Fucking lazy buggers.
Why are you like friend of the podcast, Dave Tanton?
It was a bit Dave Tanton.
I was going to ask, why do you sound like Little Howard?
Yeah,
do you sound like Little Howard? Holy shit!
Fucking hell. But yeah, like, I don't know.
If you're finished, I'm going to go vaguely onto Parky now.
Right. Okay. Cool.
So like, whereas I think that Michael Caine was very good at his craft.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a film legend. I don't think I would go that far or anything like that. I think he was decent and had like a level of star quality. Parkinson, admittedly, completely changed the game when it came to like sit down interviews on TV and things like that.
Especially in the UK.
In the UK, absolute pioneer of doing that kind of chat show format. The only problem is that over the years, he's just become like a fucking self-parody.
Yeah.
And the best bits of Parkinson had nothing really to do with Parkinson. Mm-hmm. They all had to do with his guests. He couldn't handle some of the, like Oliver Reed being absolutely fucked.
Yeah.
But at the Sex Pistols, when they were on it, Billy Connolly, when he was on it. So
Muhammad Ali as well.
Yeah, all of the great moments from Parkinson were all to do with the guests and could literally have been happened if you had somebody else who wasn't some sort of borderline nosy, boring Yorkshire wankbag.
Well, I just wanted to say, Mags, that's Muhammad Ali, not Cassius Clay.
What I always find interesting as well, like when I think about that format of chat show, like growing up, for us, it was Wogan. Was the guy who took that over for a long time.
I'm on BBC Two now.
Tell him to see Wogan. But again,
I made it up.
Wogan wouldn't have got there if it hadn't been for...
For Parky.
For Parky, yeah.
Do you want to know something?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever watched an episode of Parkinson.
Really?
Or Wogan in my life. Like, I don't... It just doesn't appeal to me. Like, chat shows have no appeal. Also, I feel that at the age, because I think, is Michael Parkinson accepted today? I think he might be an octogenarian now. He's getting.
I think he's
octogenarian. Okay, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure they're. Well, Michael Caine might still be in his 70s. No, I think they're both in their 80s.
They are both in their 80s.
When I see Michael Parkinson now, I just feel like he probably smells a bit of urine. Like, just, you know,
you're hideously
just
ancient.
like that old man way. But he's so famous, no one will tell him. And it's like somebody really needs to tell him. Michael, I think you've had an accident. You smell stale urine.
And see, on your point about stories, all the famous people Parkinson's met as well, though. He'll have loads of great stories as well.
But
it would take so long like to tell them. Yeah, I know. That he wouldn't be excited at all. Yeah.
No, see, I do quite like... there's loads of different actors and actresses who have got into their sort of 70s and 80s, and whenever like you see them on any of the talk shows or anything like that, when they start talking, it is I love it. I find them fascinating because they properly, you can see that they wind back and they'll go back to a certain point and they'll just start talking and telling great stories about fantastic times.
But also think about where their life was as well and what was going on at that period of time. Like, those are the guys that were around swinging 60s and all that kind of thing. So 60s, I think a lot of the great stories they had were coloured by a pretty interesting period. Whereas I think if you go like years later, you interview Ewan McGregor in his 80s, it'll be a bit fucking naff, really, to be fair.
I think you'd expect to see Parkinson like in a, like if they weren't famous.
Yeah.
You'd expect how they look. You'd expect Parkinson now to look like he's in a local village pub, whereas Michael Caine looks like he hangs out at the dog tracks all day. Which are now all shut down anyway, so he's got nowhere to go.
is there still a dog track in Glasgow, is there not? In East End?
In London. I don't know, but in London they were shut down loads of them. Yeah. Like, they've almost all gone.
Because they were all like...
I thought I read a thing about the last one in main part of London.
They're all fronts for money laundering.
Well,
it's probably
massive animal cruelty issues.
Yeah.
Although whippets, ex-racing whippets, apparently made very good pets for kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're. Yeah.
My boss has got an ex-racing greyhound and it's got a tattoo on its ear still. Yeah.
They apparently made very good pets for families with kids.
Yeah.
For some reason, you wouldn't think it, considering that they were trained to like viciously chase a rabbit.
They don't actually. They just sleep all day.
Yeah.
Except the Bert does. Bert won Holyrood Dog of the Year.
Oh, was that thingies?
Mark's dog. When the public vote, as they call it.
The public vote.
Yeah.
Is that because...
But is it not? Is it really nice?
Abhorrent.
What?
Is that because that doesn't even make sense, Kat.
Abhorrent. He did use that in his... No, he did. Abhorrent.
Animal, like, dog and cat owners are called porrents.
Porrents, yeah. What? That's the thing, yeah.
I thought you were making an abhorrent pun.
No. They're porrents.
Like,
rather than parents, porrents.
Yeah, I thought the same as you, Jamie. Yeah.
If you ever describe yourself as that, hang yourself.
Yeah, and hang John Everdale where you're at it.
Let's talk about two men in their 80s fighting each other.
Nah, fuck it, I'm done. I'm calling this one.
Yeah. Who are you calling it for?
I'm going to call it for, just because I absolutely hate Parkinson, I'm going to call it for Michael Caine because he's a decent actor. Decent films.
I kind of hate both of them.
I'm going to go for Michael Caine because I think he's better at what he does, maybe.
Yeah, that's it. That's the way I'm
See, I think in a physical fight between 2 8-year-old men, neither of them would win. They would both fall over and break their hips and then go to hospital. And then, actually, no, they wouldn't. If they were normal 8-year-old men, they would go to hospital, they'd probably get MRSA and die. But because they're rich, they'll go to like the Portland or something like that and all be treated really well.
I ain't going to no NHS hospital.
So, I think it'll be a draw in that both of them will break their pelvises and fall out of the public consciousness with no dignity whatsoever, and they smell of piss.
Wow, your kids are actually worse than Mike's.
You really hate old people, don't you?
No, it's just old men. Old women, I vibe with old women. So.
Jesus, no. Wow. Okay. Well, I'd go with Michael Caine because I think he's, a great actor.
He's not a great actor, coach.
Ah, well. No, we obviously disagree on that point, but yeah. So, yeah, cool. Jamie, would you like to give us socials?
Yes, I will. Talk to us on Facebook at facebook.com/fiveclubpod or at fiveclubpod, Twitter at fiveclub, email Ken at...
Ken?
What's the email? Ken? Ken? It's ken@fiveclub.co.uk.
Jamie, Instagram. Actually, do you ken our email address?
Yeah. I just told you.
Do you, the listener? The listener.
Instagram, Fife Club, or on our new shiny website at www.fiveclub.co.uk.
So are we all okay with that? Anybody got anything else to add?
No, I was just going to say it. And next up is Take the Floor with Robbie Shepherd.
He's an old man that I like.
We like Robbie Shepherd.
Robbie Shepherd, yeah.
That's a long one with Pipe Man.
What about Glenn Michael?
Nah,
no.
Met him. Didn't know.
Are you on a slogan of the week?
So it's that time of the week where I have to ask Mags, what's the slogan for this week?
Because I just remembered about like 3 minutes ago. The slogan of the week is, life always looks better through rose-cunted spectacles.
Oh, man.
That'll do. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thanks. Good night. Fuck you, John Edward.
Bye.
I'm never going to be able to say rose-tinted again now.